Mr. Chadwick, Reel 16. We're talking about your time with 1st Battalion, King's Own Yorkshire Light Infantry in Malaysia. And we're talking about the jungle patrols, when you went deeper into the jungle. You mentioned the sort of typical meal. So you'd have that for breakfast and dinner, evening meal, would you?
Well, you didn't have that every day, all day. You have a strategy of items like biscuits, hardtack biscuits, what was that potato we used to get? Dried potatoes, all things that you could carry without then changing your physical being. Because if you fell on that, so at morning, you might have a small tin of sausage or whatever. But a lot of cases, you should mix everything in and make an all in one. And as long as it's been wet and warm, that's all you need. Because.
Would each man cook his own, or would the cook cook?
Well, the cooking groups with a platoon out there.
There's something I should. Would it be a platoon patrol? The whole platoon would go.
No.
So how many?
10 of us. 10 or 11 men.
So who would cook? Would there be two groups of five or?
All mucky. Or you get one that says, I'll rustle this up in the morning. Let's see what we've got. Because we have packs. But they were all better than carrying a horse of tins, pulling beef and all this business.
Now, what was the jungle like? Could you describe the jungle in a bit more detail, what it was like to go through?
Horrific. The Gunung Bongsun was an area, apparently, which had been cleared about 50 years ago and left. That makes the worst jungle because it's strengthened. It's growth. Where it's on such virgin jungle, it's the same all the time. This was chopped down for some purpose or other, which didn't materialise, and then it was left to overgrow again. And hacking through it, your arms were bleeding, your chest were bleeding, with the spikes off the overgrowth, whatever trees they were. A mile and a half in a day wasn't bad in some circumstances. You just couldn't make headway. And I mean, the chances of finding an enemy lying on the ground was a bit ridiculous, but it had to be done.
And was there lots of sort of creepers and bamboos and things? Or?
Well, there's a lot of that. These creepers are hard. They were wrong in your neck and they were tearing at your neck. You've got the ants, the red ants that were forever on your body.
Did they bite?
Oh my God, did they bite? And of course, the scourge of all soldiers in Malaya, the leeches. Now, by now, we have discarded boots ammunition, and we were in jungle boots, which were a forerunner of these trainers. They were a canvas top, which laced up to about here.
Halfway up.
Shin. And to keep the leeches out, which he never did, and this is absolutely true, and it's incredible, we used to lace up to there, and then put khaki putties round your leg, and on top of that, soap all the lace holes of the boot with damp soap. So there was no gaps. And every night, your legs were full of leeches, suffering away. Now, one incident, slightly embarrassing. We'd across the river, and we spotted a sampan on one side of the Sunday Garanga. So I wanted someone to swim across there and get his sampan in the water and ferried the patrol across. Of course, it was about 5 minutes finished. So I asked for volunteers, and of course, none were forthcoming. So, yours truly dived in. But I just went in, they covered me on one bank. I just took my shirt off, which was falling to bits anyway, and left me jungle boots, putties, and trousers on. Swam across, and when I got there, there was a padlock on. In the middle of the jungle, anyway, that's in the story. But I had an unpleasant feeling. So I opened my trousers up, and sure enough, a leech had gone into my penis and was sucking. Now, there's nothing I can do. I can't get it out till it bursts. You could try and burn them out with a cigarette. Dettol was wonderful, but you don't carry bottles of Dettol in the jungle. Salt was a good help, but the salt was with the lads in the pack. So I was sat there, and I had to sit there 4 hours till this thing burst. Now, as a result of that, when I wrote my report when I came back, I said, as far as I was concerned, it was essential for all river crossing exercises, especially, the troops carried condoms, and they did from thereafter. I don't think anybody else ever got one where I did. And there's two kinds of leeches. There's the leech, and there's the buffalo leech, which is 4 inches. And they cling to buffaloes where there's water. Well, it was a buffalo leech that I caught. My legs were full, my thighs were full of leeches. But they were only leeches, not buffalo leeches. Just that one buffalo leech. Well, it wasn't a very pleasant experience. No pain. But fear, really. I wonder where the hell it was going to go on the side. But, of course, he suck and suck till they burst. It bursted. So I put in my report when I came back. It was highly commended, and they all covered them after that. So if we were going like wading across a sandy up to the chest, the lads would slip on them because they didn't want the same complications. But if, like some of the lads did early on, pulled the leeches off, they were on the way home because they could not kill them out there. They put paraffin on them, paraffin, to try and burn the oscillation out of cotton.
Now, why couldn't you pull a leech off? Could you just explain?
Because apparently it has two suckers. If you pull it off, they don't come off. And that poisons that active part. And you have to get out of the country to get a treatment to cure it, and leaves horrible marks. A lot of lads were thrown back to the UK. They were a problem. And of course, with this kind of patrolling, personal hygiene, etc., you were suffering ringworm and tear.
Well, now, the ringworm, how did that affect you?
Exactly what it says, you get a ring on you, which is irritable. You start to scratch, and it develops into a rash. Tinea was primarily in the crotch.
What was it?
Well, it was the dampness, the humidity, then the heat, and it was akin to chaffing in winter. In the UK, it was what I used to call the Malayan chaffing. You were red raw.
Like prickly heat.
Same family. And the only cure, the best cure we found, which we couldn't do in the jungle, it used to rain practically every night at the same time. As soon as it did, when we were in at his base, everybody ran out naked in the rain and lent that all on it, one of the roof, that rainwater. It better than all the arguments. They had all these painting you with gentian and violet and all this. But that rainwater really worked the whole.
What about the humidity and the heat? Was that worse in the jungle and say in the than the you know near the coast? What was it like?
That anybody who had any weakness in the chest, it found them out very quickly. The humidity, the breathing was impaired, and if there was anything like bronchitis, asthma, any that lad didn't last long. In Malaya, or he was brought out and given a base job. It really did affect the humidity. It was horrific.
And what about, I mean, some of the diseases of the jungle. I mean, the one thing in, that's mentioned: jungle sores, ulcerated jungle sores. What were they?
Well, these things were caused with primarily you had the red ants. You'd need a biologist to tell you how many things were settling on your body and biting you. And then, of course, you scratched them. And, of course, as young as you were getting run down physically. So you weren't fighting back as you would if you were getting the proper hygiene, baths, salt baths, ointments, whatever. And of course, the proverbial mosquito. Every morning when you woke up, your face was like Joe Louis had been working on you. You were just bumped. You were distorted for about an hour and a half, and then they all settled down. But this brings you on then to the worst job of all. I've never met anybody who's enjoyed it. If anybody said they enjoyed it, well, they should be the mentor. It had to be done, and it was murder. It was ambush patrol. Now, with the climatic conditions out there, the ambush would be laid 6:30 at night. And you to lie there till at least 5 next morning.
Now, where would these where would this take place?
On tracks.
In the jungle.
In the jungle. Of information passed down to us from headquarters. There's been movement in this area, and they've used this track or that track. And you to go out there, and what we used to do. Got to be no speaking, no movement. Any of nature's activities had to be done where you laid. And we used to link up with the saddle ropes tied to each person's wrist. So that if there was any movement, the first person to see it would just pull. There was no verbal communications. There was no RT communication. Now you were lying there from 6 at night till at least 5 next morning, which was 11 long hours. And you'd all the insects of the Ulu dropping on you, biting you. Of course, it sleeves down, slacks on at night to protect most of your body. But doesn't matter what you did, it was the most uncomfortable. I had a summer for 50 bandits all day, then lie there all night. And wouldn't be so bad if you got results, but invariably you didn't. Later on, they tell me, did it, but using 200 men or so, company jobs to lie up. covering about 10 tracks, and then we might get to Wicklow. They never really achieved much, but they had to be done. Anybody can try and avoid them. And all these things added to were taking the toll of you physically. You didn't feel ill or anything, but things didn't heal. Everything was starting to go septic. And then after a period of 3 or 4 months, you get that week back in Penang. There was a beach there, and we used to not go there, you were sent there. There was a canteen there, you had your meals in bathing trunks, you went to the bar in bathing trunks, and you were in and out the sea all day for the salt water effects on the body, healing up the jungle sores, the leech bites, the lot. It was a physical strain, and not about it.
Did some of them, I mean, were some of the men squeamish about leeches and snakes and creepy crawlies?
We all had a little idiosyncrasies, you might say, because I might as well tell you straight, I'm frightened to death of snakes. I'm frightened to death of them. I'd have to lie there all night knowing there were snakes mooching around. But it had to be done.
Were there many snakes?
Quite a lot. Mine snakes are an animal, but we have small courses on them. And they only attack if you think you're going to attack. And that is a fact of life. But if you're going through the jungle and you haven't seen it, it thinks you're coming for it. So it will strike.
What sorts were there?
There was a spitting cobbler, the king cobbler. There was a bootlace. Now, the bootlace was a bootlace. It was about that long.
12 inches long?
12 inches. But there's a lot of myths about snakes. That if a spitting cobbler or a king cobbler bites you, 4 seconds, rubbish. Absolute garbage. Not necessarily would it kill you. It'll take hours. But some snakes affect the nervous system. Some snakes affect the blood system. Now, if you're going to die and you're going to be bitten, hope it's the blood, because it's the nervous system, I believe it is a horrific death. And of course, if you're bitten, all you see is something shooting away. So you know, or if you didn't carry antidote, you'd be got to a hospital as quick as possible. So if you were caught out in the open, it was a wooden top coat, unless you were lucky. Of course,
were many bitten?
Not a lot.
So it was more a fear than a...
I saw one man bitten, and he screamed. And we all fired. We saw this black thing flying away. And I said, where is it? Down there. And he put. And you can see. I can see it now. Two little puncture marks there.
In his shoe.
Where the fangs had gone in. But luckily we were about 3 miles from a rubber plantation. I got on the wireless the police who we were in contact with, and the best diagnosis I could give. And the hospital people had a vehicle out waiting for when he came through into the plantation, and he got his treatment there and then. And he was okay after it. But the thought of lying at night with these creeping around didn't excite me one little bit.
What formation would you adopt when going through the jungle? You've got a 10-man patrol. How would you go about it?
The jungle dictated the formations. And as I've said, in the Green Mountain Bomb Sioux, it was that thick. That thick. It would have been ludicrous, other than Indian file, single file. Imagine you've got one man there, and say you want one here and one there. You've all got to hack to move. So the man at the front does the hacking for half an hour and then falls back, and somebody else takes his place. So you just sway the way through. And it was realistic, a mile and a half maybe in a day. You hadn't done bad. And to be truthful, you didn't know where you were when you got there. You had maps, but it never left my pocket. It was a waste of time looking at it. Yeah, I mean, we just didn't know where we were.
In these circumstances, were you properly alert for being ambushed yourselves? Or, I mean, if the first man was busy hacking away.
This was it. So I say it was virtually, you'd never to admit it's totally unoperational. It was virtually unoperational. The only thing we could hope for, if they did see us out there, they wouldn't take us out. Because if you were hacking your way through there, you didn't stand a chance. If they set an ambush out there, which wasn't easy because it was that thick, the worst case of the ambushing, and you see a photograph in that book, I wasn't there, I wasn't a long way away. I forget which company and which battalion it was. I'd been doing a bit of training. And after they'd done the shooting every morning, they used to come back to a pool and have a swim. Well, this day they went for a swim and they never came out. They shot the lot. I think you find a little funeral photograph there. I think it was about six or eight dead. Four or five wounded. Some of them died afterwards. They were ambushed, caught literally with his trousers down. And of course, there was none of the enemy killed at all. They watched them do it daily. A big mistake, a lesson to be learned. They set a proper milk run out to the range, say to 10, 10 to 12 on the range, 12 to 1 a swim, and then back to camp. And about the third day, they waited for them and annihilated them.
Now, that's more back nearer camp, but when they were out in the jungle, here it refers to making three-man shelters, bashers. Did you do that when you were...
That time, yeah. You had poncho caves, which were wonderful. They were shaped like a big bee. A big triangle, and there was a neck part in, and by devious means, they were made for that purpose. You could link them up and look, and if you lean to the pressure, and that would constitute the roof to keep the rain out. And then you cover it with leaves, and one thing and another. And I must admit, Peter, they were very uncomfortable nights that we spent there. You can't take your clothes off. You can't take your boots or socks off. It rained every night, so you got soaked and it dried on. Hence all these skin rashes and tibias and all this goodness. You couldn't be too noisy. You were a little on edge for chance something was going to happen. You had to guard yourself all night. You couldn't just.
You'd have a guard, would you?
Well, you'd have to. Well, you don't just go to sleep. You'd all be scared, me included. You'd have to. You can't leave one man ever on his own in a place like that. But you'd always have to have two. You couldn't have fires burning. discomforts of the world that piled into one.
Did you ever actually meet the enemy on one of these patrols yourself? I mean, in the deep jungle.
No.
Do you think they had any operational effectiveness at all? Would you have done them yourself?
No. What? The only time that we met them was on advice or information received. And you went out in a bigger force than 10. You'd have 30 or upwards of men. And you would attack a camp. Numerous occasions, I don't know how many are, by hand. We'd just get there and their sentry would spot us. And you'd literally see them running out of the camp.
So
fire still burning.
You never met them when you were just wandering about the jungle. But sometimes, would these camps be in the jungle?
In a clearing. They'd make a clearing.
And how would you have got the intelligence about them? From the police?
The police could only get it from the village. The villagers held the key to it. And that's where it was sad. And I hated doing it. But it did work. The police and the military, not so much the infantry, the military, would warn these villagers, we know they are coming in at night. And you're giving them rice and sustenance and whatever they want. It has got to stop, but it didn't stop. Quite understandably, by virtue of the fact that if they didn't get it, they would kill them. So they brought in the burning policy. And we went in our own areas and burnt those villages to the ground and moved all the villagers into areas we wanted them, where we could protect, cutting the insurgent or the bandit or whatever you call him, cutting his lifelines off, his food, his money. His food was the main thing. He had to come in to get food.
How would you actually go about the burning of a village? I mean, wouldn't the villagers object though?
But it had to be done because they were the insurgents' lifeline.
Would you have to employ force to get them out of the village? Or
it was force. Not this, but not violent. You see, there'd be six of us, six soldiers, maybe, and then we got the Malayan police and their new recruits. And they would run round with most of the torches and torch the whole village. The camp on obliterated. But prior to it being done, we had an area to take them to. Our budget may be tented initially, but it meant sure that the bandits in that area had lost their source of food, supply, and information. Because they were telling them that the troops had been through. Our men. And this was a great thing.